All right, so the idea of this talk is just sort of introduce some of the main ideas in the study of singularities of Schubert varieties. So the first natural question is, which Schubert varieties actually have singularities? Okay.
So let me ask it the other way and ask which Schubert varieties are smooth.
Let me briefly say what smooth means.
So a d-dimensional variety is smooth if every point P on a variety has a neighborhood which is diffeomorphic to C to the D.
We could say holomorphic here, it wouldn't change the definition. And this is sort of a topological or maybe differential definition. And let me give something that's more amenable to algebraic calculation. So smooth if the tangent space TP of X at every point has dimension D. This requires our variety to be connected. That's not much of a requirement here. And in the algebraic context, the tangent space should be defined as the dual of this space, of this algebraically defined space. And let me say what this means. Okay, so at a point P, there's a local ring. The local ring OXP, the local ring of X at P. This is the set of rational functions F over G on an affine. So for those of you not familiar with algebraic geometry, affine here could mean simply the same as C to the N for some N. Neighborhood of P such that G of P is not equal to 0. So in other words, these are rational functions that are defined at P. And MP, this is the ideal in OXP of functions vanishing at P. Okay? So to calculate the tangent space, we take this ideal, and then we take products of elements in this ideal, and quotient by that, and we look at the dimension of this space over C, over our field. So the theorem on which varieties, which Schubert varieties for G mod B, for SLN, are smooth, this was done by Lakshmibai and Sandhya in 1983. 1990. And this is preceded by other theorems of Ryan, Volper, who these are somewhat less combinatorial than this theorem. So it says that XW in GLN mod P is smooth if and only if W avoids the permutation 4231 and 3412. And let me explain precisely what avoids means. It means that there don't exist indices I, J, K, L with that are where W is in this order, so let me write that out. They do not exist. So this is the this is saying it avoids 4231 because there are no indices that are in the order 4231, and similarly for 3412 we would write W of J greater than W of I greater than W of L greater than W of K. Now, the basic idea of the proof is that we reduce the problem of calculating the tangent space at PID. So I'm going to let PID PV for permutation in general to be the fixed point, the torus fixed point V mod V. Okay. So we're going to reduce the problem of calculating the tangent space at the identity. So this is the Schubert cell with just one point in it of XW to combinatorics. And then solving the combinatorics. Okay, so let me explain to you why we can get away with calculating just the identity for this question. Okay. Let me put this on this board. So this is something that's going to be generally important in studying singularities. I'm going to call it the principle of semi-continuity. So it turns. So really, in each specific case, there's going to be some theorem that says some invariant is semi-continuous. But this is sort of a generally true principle, which is that singularities get worse on closed. So if you have some invariant of a singularity, and let's say higher means more singular, then the set at which it exceeds a certain value will be closed. Okay. And on the Schubert variety, we have a B action. Gives an isomorphism between all points on XW on a Schubert cell. So this means that if XW is singular, at PV, or in general we can substitute has bad singularities at PV in any particular sense, it's going to be singular, again substituting at least as bad in some particular sense, on all of XV, because it's going to be at least that bad on all of the Schubert cell, and since it's going to be that bad on a closed set, it has to be at least that bad on the entire closure. Okay, so notice that our PID is, of course, on XV for any V, and so if the Schubert variety is going to be singular, then it's got to be singular at the identity. Okay, let me say something about what happens for other types for the theorem. Basically it's going to be true for any invariant where you can compute it by an exact sequence. Okay, and that holds for sort of just about anything. So in types B and C, instead of just having two patterns, we need 27 patterns. In type D, we need 49 patterns. So these were all enumerated by Billy in 98. There are specific patterns here. And if you have the right notion of pattern avoidance, then you can also do this by saying that use all singular Schuberts for A3, that's flags in C4, B3, C3, and D4, and I suppose I should say G2. If you use all singular Schubert varieties in those for patterns, then that will be enough. That's more than this number. Okay. And this is due to Billy and Posnikoff in 03. All right, that's it for talking about which Schubert varieties are smooth, and let me now talk about where they are smooth. So this theorem is only a finite type, but there's no reason why. I mean, this is. I'm not absolutely sure, but I would think so. Yeah, if you reduce you can always reduce to a finite part of it, so yeah, it still holds. So the question, where is it singular? Okay, and let me, in view of this, we only care about maximal V where it's singular, and once we know the maximal ones, then all the ones below that in Bruha order are going to be singular. Okay, so we can rephrase this question as find V maximal in Bruha order. Such that x sub u is going to be singular at pv. Okay. So there is a theorem for this in type A, in other words, for the ordinary flag variety. Okay. There are four independent proofs of this, same result, all coming out about 3 years ago. I'm not going to try to describe it because the exact combinatorics are a little bit complicated. Okay. And the way the first three set of authors do it, they use some reduction to combinatorics of the calculation of the dimension of the tangent spaces. Basically, a generalization of that reduction to combinatorics. And then they solve the combinatorics. But I want to say a few things about Cortez's proof because it's sort of new and different. So the idea of Cortez is that she reconstructs she constructs partial resolutions of singularities. Okay, and here's sort of another important idea for studying singularities. So let me put it on this board. Okay. So the idea is that we're going to take some smooth variety y. So this works in general for any complex variety that maps to x. So x is going to be the variety, the singular variety we're interested in. And we're going to find there's going to be some map pi, y is smooth, and we want pi to be projective, meaning the fibers of the map are compact, if you prefer that language. And we want it to be an isomorphism on a dense open set. And so the idea is to study y to understand x. Okay? And we'll see a few examples of resolutions of singularities. So for example, one of the things Matthew talked about yesterday was the Bott-Samuelson varieties. And one of the reasons they're nice is that they are a resolution of singularities in, well, not quite in a strict sense, but I have told you sort of a weaker sense of it. They're a resolution of singularities of Schubert varieties. Okay. So the idea of Cortez's proof is that first, so there is some candidate set of V that I haven't told you about. Okay. But but the first part of the proof is that there's an explicit calculation and I'll tell you later how you can do such an explicit calculation, that xw is singular at pv. Of course, the v that we're interested in. Okay, the second step is that for 3, 4, 1, 2, avoiding w, so for w that satisfy the second condition there, but not the first, necessarily, we're going to use a resolution due to essentially the Zelovinsky. I'm not going to explain this one either. But so this is due to Zelovinsky at 82. He only did it for Grassmannians, but there's sort of a natural extension to 3, 4, 1, 2 avoiding permutations. And what she does is that she shows that it is an isomorphism for X for the, on the Schubert cells when U is not less than or equal to any of our candidate Vs. So notice that when we have a resolution of singularities, wherever it's isomorphic, then whatever happened below must have been smooth because we had an isomorphism with something that was smooth. Okay, so
we're trying to figure out where
xw is singular. Okay, we're going to look at some Schubert cell inside xw, so u is going to be less than w. And we already have a candidate set, which is all the Vs. So let me say, huh? This is U. Okay. Yes. That was that the source of confusion? Okay. So let me remind you that. Let me finish reminding you that we have a candidate set of these. This might not help keep track. Okay. Right, so whenever we have an isomorphism, we knew that part was smooth to begin with. Okay? Because it's an isomorphism to something that was smooth. Okay. So in general, she constructs partial resolutions. So what do I mean by a partial resolution? I mean by partial resolution, something like a resolution, except that y is not actually smooth. It's just somehow closer to being smooth than x. Okay. Let me call these partial resolutions pi I. I don't really care about... From yi to xw. Okay. And then what happened is that for u not less than any candidate v, then there's going to be some pi I with the property that so we want pi I to be an isomorphism over x naught, the Schubert cell U, and moreover, since it's only a partial resolution, she also has to show that pi I inverse of the Schubert cell is smooth. And this is done by induction And that's possible because yi's are related to other Schubert varieties. Of smaller dimension. In fact, there could be smooth bundles of some sort over.
This should be not less than 3.
That's right. Same as here. Okay, this problem is in general open for other types. And you can imagine with 27 patterns in B and C and 49 patterns in type D, so these K and V, what you do is basically you recognize those two patterns inside W and play with them in certain ways to get these. So you can imagine with that many patterns, you're probably not going to be able to do it just purely combinatorially. Or if you want to, you're going to set a lot of, it's going to be a very long characterization. Okay. Anything you can say, I mean, as far as I can tell. Right, so there are some, so one would like something that's sort of purely combinatorially based on knowing V and W rather than having, so there are results where you get it by constructing the Brouhaha order below W and looking at a neighborhood of V in this order and seeing what it looks like. And then you can tell if it's smooth or not there. Okay. But
this answer
is non-recursive. Once you have W, well, I don't know what you mean by non-recursive. Once you have W, you can produce all the V's straight off by looking at W. I don't know what else you would mean by non-recursive yet. All right. So that settles everything I can say about, or everything I am going to say about where they are singular. And now let me talk about how singular they are. Okay. I'll have to explain what I mean by that. How singular is X L U? Okay, so I'm going to talk about, or I might not get to, I might only briefly touch on the last one, three different ways of measuring how singular. Okay. One is multiplicity, which I'll define. All these I'll define to some extent. Second is local intersection, it's cohomology, and third is something that algebraists call type, and algebraic geometers have never come up with a better word for it, as far as I can tell. Okay, so let me start with the first. Okay, if we have a local ring, OXP, and we have a maximal ideal, M, xp, this is the maximal ideal of this local ring. That's exactly the situation I had before in heavy based. Then we can define something called the associated graded ring. Okay. So denote it GR OXP as a vector space over C. It's going to be OXP mod MXP. So when we're dealing with a complex variety, this is always going to be C. We're going to take this direct sum of vector spaces and so on. And the product is going to be the natural one that's going to be induced on this. Okay. And let me define the Hilbert series. This is another... This is sort of... This, maybe I should have put that up there as well. This is something that gives you slightly more information than multiplicity. But it's going to be easier to define multiplicity in terms of it. Let me call it xp. It's going to take a variable t, and it's going to be the sum, it's going to be a generating series of the dimension as a complex vector space of mxp to d over mxp to d plus 1. So, in other words, it's the generating series of the dimensions of these pieces of this ring. Okay, t to the d, of course. Okay. So there's a general theorem from commutative algebra that the Hilbert series is going to be always equal to some polynomial C of t. This is a polynomial in integer coefficients, in fact, divided by 1 minus t to the dimension of X, our space. Okay. Now let me define the multiplicity from here. Multiplicity of X at P is this polynomial C evaluated at 1. So it is 1 for smooth varieties. For smooth points, I guess, on a variety. It is always greater than 1 otherwise. You can also think of it as the degree of the following projective variety. We want the one that's associated to that ring. Right? This thing is called the projective tangent cone. And let's, vaguely speaking, multiplicity measures sort of number of branches at the point P. Okay. So for example, if you had a curve, you have a nodal curve, then the multiplicity here is 2. If you had some curve, so this is multiplicity 2. These aren't Schubert varieties, but if you had a curve that went like that, then the multiplicity here is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think I drew. Because the curve passes through this point 5 times. This is one of the things that semi-continuity holds for. So as you go down in Bruha order, the multiplicity goes up. Okay. Oh, I haven't used that board. Good. Okay, this is known essentially when W indexes, let me just say known for Schubert varieties on Grassmannians in general. On Grassmannians in type A, and in general we want to set, this is only known when the Grassmannian is minuscule, if you know what that means. The entire Hilbert series, in fact. Okay, so this is a recursive formula was originally given by Lakshmibai and Veyman in 1990. Okay. And let me talk about an explicit formula in the case of Grassmannians, the usual Grassmannian in type A. Okay. So the Grassmannian of D planes in CN. This is a formula, so the version I'm giving is due to Krautenthaler, but the purpose of Krautenthaler's paper was in fact to have something that explained, to have something combinatorial that explained both formulas due to Rosenthal and Solovinsky, and a different formula due to Kreiman and Lakshmibai. And the formula is the following. We're going to say that mu p v, so the multiplicity at a fixed point v of xw, this is going to be the number of families of halves . These are going to be lattice paths non-intersecting lattice paths, and I have to tell you their beginning points and end points. So the beginning points of the paths are going to be 1 d up to dd. These are the coordinates. And the ending points, let me write some notation and I'll explain what it means in a moment. D comma kappa L comma plus I, D minus kappa L kappa L plus IL, and this is L from 1 to D. And I'll tell you how to calculate these. Okay. So there's a way of indexing Schubert varieties on the Grassmannian by partitions. Let me do it. Okay. Okay. So this is the partition 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 3, 3, 2, 2. Okay. So let's say W is this. And let me draw V as this. So V is equal to 2, 1, 1, 1. Okay. So let's say we want to calculate I4. Okay. So we're going to count 4 up from the bottom. I4 is relatively easy, so this is 3, so I4 is going to equal 3 plus 4, which is 7. And then kappa, what I want to do is I want to start from here and draw a diagonal line until a T touches the green box. Okay? And then I want to measure this length, that's 1. And so kappa of 4 is 1. Okay. So the idea is that we're going to take lattice, so now that I think about it, I had thought I needed to do this, but now that I think about it, I probably do. The idea of non-intersecting lattice paths is that I'm going to take some number of points here, and these points are going to be, you know, in the plane, they're all going to be somewhere up here somewhere, and we want to take lattice paths that can't do this. So we're going to have family of lattice paths. They're not allowed to cross. They're allowed to, they're basically allowed to go only along the lattice, which I haven't drawn. Okay. There's some lattice here. And we take every lattice path that goes from this set of points to this set of points. And that's the multiplicity. Okay? And let me say that the Hilbert series, I can tell you what the Hilbert series is simply by telling you what that polynomial C of t was. And this is the sum over R family of paths of t to the number of corners where you go this way and then this way. So in this family, there's exactly one such corner right here. Go ahead. So I'll tell you in a moment how these things were proven, but no, I don't really have a good explanation for what these things mean. They are known for other types for the minuscule ones.
Do you have nice pictures like that?
I don't think anybody's done nice pictures like that. But what Crondollar did is take formulas and convert them to nice pictures like that. And so presumably what he did, you could basically do to the known formulas in those cases as well. They're probably going to be something like lattice paths like this, which are symmetric about a certain axis in certain ways. So the Rosenthal-Solovinsky formula is a determinant of binomial coefficients. Oops. Okay. So the idea of how this is proven is that we're going to calculate on local charts. So, in other words, neighborhoods of PV in XW, and then we just perform the actual calculation of multiplicity in Hilbert series. And here there's something called standard monomial theory. And at least one way of looking at standard monomial theory is that it gives Gromner bases. On each chart. And these are fairly combinatorial objects, so they do sort of lead to things that might suggest lattice paths and that sort of thing. All right. Let me quickly talk about Kazan-Lusik polynomials. So the idea is that we take standard monomial theory. These give certain let's say global, they're not really functions, they're sections of O of something. And if you look at what they are on each chart, then that gives a Grosvenor basis for this thing on that chart, right? So let's say X. So these neighborhoods are in fact the same as dual Schubert cells intersect XW, essentially. Okay. Let me cross. So it's really this cross some CZN. But that's an irrelevant factor since we're just concerned about singularities, and this really does absolutely nothing to singularities. Okay, and so this this is in fact affine space. And so this is a Gromner basis of the ideal defining this as a subvariety of that. Okay. Kazan-Lusik polynomials. So these were originally defined, I think, as giving the change of basis, I'll just say a certain change of basis on the Hecke algebra. And Tausch and Lustig noticed that they were positive, and Schubert varieties come into this because using some very high-powered algebraic geometry, you can prove that the Kazan-Lustig polynomial PVW, so these are going to index certain permutations in the Heck algebra originally, and they prove that this is all by Kazan-Lustig. This is the sum over all I of the dimension of the local intersection cohomology. The I-th local intersection cohomology of XW at PV. So I'm not going to be able to define exactly what this is, but you can think of there being some cohomology theory that works nicely on singular spaces. That's why they were defined in the first place. And this part at PV somehow measures the local contribution of at the point V to our intersection cohomology of the whole space. Okay, so this is sort of the local contribution at PV to the intersection cohomology. All right, this is another, this is also something that measures singularity. So it's going to be 1 at all smooth points. But in fact, it's going to be 1 at slightly more general class of points that are called rationally smooth. You can almost take this as a definition. In types A, B, and E, smooth and rationally smooth are the same. So.
Mm-hmm. It is a
Poincaré polynomial ecology, the local intersection homology at that point. Those are the Kazan-Lustig polynomials.
You're about to tell us, there is something you're about to tell us how this measures the similarity?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure I understand the last sentence. You mean that the value of this polynomial is 1?
Yes.
At, but Q is a variable.
That's right. It's the polynomial 1.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? So 1 plus 0 cubed to the first, so on.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
So where does this smooth point come in? I mean, you have...
So PVW is equal to 1 if PV is smooth on XW.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Sorry about that. Okay. Now, basically, we have combinatorial rules. So, in general, it's an open problem to calculate these polynomials, give some combinatorial rule to calculate these polynomials. Okay? So they exist, so they're known for the special cases and it basically happens that these special cases correspond to the case where something nice happens geometrically, which is that we have small resolutions of singularities, and in that case, small is some condition on how big the fibers of your resolution are, how what their dimension is, And in the case of a small resolution, then one can relate this intersection cohomology to the ordinary cohomology of the resolution. Okay. So relate IH of XW at BV to be exact, the homology of, let's say, our resolution Y, but we just are interested in the inverse image of PV. Ordinary home. So in this case, we can do that. We can relate our intersection cohomology to the ordinary cohomology of the inverse image, and then we can try to calculate that. But we need this condition small, which I'm not going to, which I don't really have time to tell you about. And these are the cases where we have 3-2-1 hexagon avoiding permutations. This is done by Billy and Warrington. And these are precisely the cases where the Bott-Samuelson is small. Those are the varieties that Mattia talked about yesterday. And in fact, so this is if and only if. And it's also known for 3-4-1-2 avoiding permutations. And here you can use the Zelvinsky resolution that I mentioned in Cortez's proof of which things were singular. This is done by Lescu. And this follows the Grassmannian case, which was done by Lescu and Schütz and Berger. Okay. Let me quickly say a few things about type. No, be brief. I'll take like 2 minutes. Okay. Type, putting in quotes because I would like a better word for this. So this is going to be the rank of a canonical sheaf of XW at the point V. This is the rank. There's a way of calculating this. This looks something mysterious in algebraic geometry. Rank of the leftmost term of a free resolution of our chart . So this is given by some ring. Mod some ideal, and this that's so C of X is equal to the coordinate ring of that here. Okay. And so we want to get the free resolution of, let's say, I, our ideal I. Okay. So this is another, so I forgot to mention, because on Lustig polynomials, the coefficient for each qi is semi-continuous. Okay? That is actually a hard theorem. The multiplicity statement is not that hard to prove. Okay, so this is one for smooth and Gorenstein points. You can take this as a definition of Gorenstein. Semi-continuity holds for this. Yes. Thank you. Okay, so it also gets worse as you go down. So theorem myself and Alex is that XW is Gorenstein, meaning all the points are Gorenstein, if and only if it is Gorenstein at generic singularities. So in other words, at maximal V such that PV is singular in XW. Okay, and there's also a combinatorial way of stating this. Okay, sorry to run over time, so I'm done.